I just believe in the process, and we're going to win going through the process.
Now, Bills Mafia, it's time for the main event. So sit back and enjoy the show.
Bills Mafia, welcome to the Red, White and Buffalo Blues, a UK Bills podcast. Joined today with Robin.
Good evening.
I'm Matt, talking everything Bills with a UK twist. And we're obviously going to be previewing the Dolphins game, but I think we have to start with a bit of big news.
The new signing?
Yeah, the return of Third and Cole.
Yes, the prodigal son. The no vax for me, thanks very much. I hate the Bills fan base. A man who left at the end and said he was never going to come back has suddenly come back. And yes. Yeah.
What's your view on that? Because, I mean, on our little podcast group chat, obviously, we know Mark actually was not it. When I put it on there, he just did, obviously, his response, FFS. And,
yes.
More better options. What's your take?
So, I'll before stick to what again. I said. Let me give you my answer, and then we can talk this thing out, because I can't remember what the phrase was. It's been a long day. I'm not a black or white sort of person. There's nuance everywhere. So I'll stick to what I said on the review show when the rumors were circulating that it was arriving, which was what we could really do with is 2020 Cole Beasley rather than 2021 Cole Beasley. It's overly optimistic to think 2022 Cole Beasley will be an improvement than he was of the previous year. Counter to that, Josh wanted him back. The team seems happy to want him back. And if Josh wants him back and we manage the expectation that he's not coming in to save the team, he's coming in to maybe add a little wrinkle and just be on the field and just be an option. It's too much to think he's going to be 10 catches for 120 yards or even, 14 catches for 85 yards. If he can just come in and do something and pick up a couple of catches and hold on to them, looking at you, Isaiah, then let's take the win. Let's not judge him against his standard, his 2020 standard. Let's judge him as a gadget, occasional receiver who can do a job.
Yeah, I'm for it. I mean, even people have said on Twitter, when you go through not just other Bills fans, but your beat reporters and all that, you could actually simply see that it is a good move by the Bills. A, Josh Allen actually wanted him back. And also, Cole Beasley actually reached out to Brandon Bean.
Yes.
And he's actually, and the fact that they've also, him, Bean and McDermott, sat down, cleared the air with all the issues surrounding his absence or surrounding his release, you can kind of see from how it's worked with Cole Beasley, even 2021 Cole Beasley in the slot, compared to what we've had now with McKenzie, with Crowder and Shakir. Cole Beasley, I think, is that missing piece. Forget OBJ. He's come out and saying that he's not even going to entertain playing this year, even playoffs.
It was always a bit of a reach, wasn't it, OBJ coming back? You look at how slowly Trey White came back, similar injury. It was always a push.
But Cole Beasley is that signing, which I think can reignite this offense and help us elevate the game a little bit more. And the fact that in the locker room, no one gave a crap about his political stances, all that. You just see some of the posts he put on Instagram, on Twitter, and you see all these guys, all the players in the locker room actually saying, "Welcome back, good to have you back." I think some of them even called him dad.
Yeah.
Doctor's back and all that. The fact that he's still well loved in there, and with him, I mean, they tried out other people. I mean, if they tried out OBJ and got him on, you've got two things. You choose anyone else other than Beasley or sign OBJ, you've got to get him to know the playbook quite quickly. Got to get him up to speed quite quickly. And obviously the chemistry there with Josh Allen. With Cole Beasley, yes, he's probably not got exactly the same knowledge of the new playbook, Ken Dorsey's playbook. But we all know that Dorsey's playbook pretty much comes from Dable. Maybe the odd tweak here. So he knows the system, he knows certain plays, and they probably have had a few plays lined up for him just to learn and actually use on Saturday. There's probably no doubt that they're going to actually call him up for Saturday.
Yeah, and good odds.
And it's just the case that you get John Brown back, you get Josh Allen back. I mean, you've got, if anyone's ever watched the Blues Brothers,
getting the band back together.
They're getting the band back together.
Yeah. Yeah. You make a good argument. You do. I'm going to repeat what I said about tempering that expectations. They're coming back in a practice squad capacity. They're not coming back as all conquering heroes. If John Brown and Cole Beasley can come back, provide maybe a bit of experience. I mean, Shakir, I think would appreciate that. If McKenzie likes having him around, if they can provide something and just give us a couple of plays, just give us a couple of things, then I'll be happy with that. I'm not gonna consider it a failure if he doesn't get 10 catches. If he gets a couple of catches and if he's just on the field, then that's a win. It's not going to be the difference between sort of going all the way or not, but it might just give us a couple of plays that might just let a couple of things go our way.
Yeah, and it's pretty much I don't know which reporter actually said it, that this move is all about giving Josh Allen that safety net, that easy dump down button in the passing game. Yeah. And we all know that he's referred to as third and cold. He'll get that third down into first downs 9 times out of 10. And people think it's a bit of a dig at Dorsey and all that. Josh actually came out and admitted that there are certain plays, concepts they haven't run because they haven't got Cole Beasley. And that's the concepts and plays that Cole Beasley would run.
Yeah.
And other guys are not up to, haven't got that nuance, haven't got that craftiness that Cole Beasley has. And now it hopefully is going to re-diversify the offense. So it's a key point. It's a key clog in the offense. I agree. It's not gonna instantly say, right, we're going straight to the Super Bowl. But I think it will help get over the slump we have had this season in the slot.
Yeah, it also, anything that gives Josh more options and more comfort is obviously something to be welcomed, because there's you can't really blame the guy when you've got that many drops and just that lack of separation and those lack of success and production out of the slot that he's then gonna not bother throwing there. Again, he's just going to tuck the ball and run himself, or you know, reach for a longer throw that maybe isn't there, kind of thing. You can't really blame him for that. So if it provides that level of comfort and that he's got a couple of throws, and then of course everything always works in a balance. If defenses know that Beasley's your option on third down, then suddenly Diggs and Davis become a little bit more attractive, don't they, to the receivers? They can't cover them all. So it's the thing we always said about Von Miller. You know, Von Miller's there as the pass rush, but if you have to pay attention to him, then that gives opportunities for other players to come in. It's that wide receiver pack that you're hoping for, that production at one end gives more opportunities to the other guys. So, let's see what happens. He's got something like three call-ups, hasn't he? because he's officially on the practice squad, so they can call him up for three games. I think that's the rule.
I always thought it was four for some strange reason.
I'm sure I saw three, but I'm happy to be wrong. But there's a limited number anyway of times you can bring someone up from the practice squad before you have to add them to the 53, which we're probably going to cover in a second when we see who's not playing on Saturday.
Yeah, and so let's get to it. It's the third part of the of the trilogy. I think
the battle of the two armies.
Battle of the what armies?
Battle of the is the final part of the Hobbit trilogy. It's called the Battle of Five Armies. But what I did is I made it into two armies, kind of little bit of cut and paste. There.
Yeah, no, I was never a big fan of them.
They weren't good, but it was the one that came to me at the time. Which one were you thinking of?
I can't remember where I was actually. I had them all listed down, some of the quotes for it, but obviously,
which movie trilogy were you thinking of?
Oh, Back to the Future.
Fantastic. Yes, that did end the trilogy in style. So, yeah, I'd be happy to get a Back to the Future. Much more Back to the Future than A World's End.
Yeah, that's true. But it's going to be interesting because this time the tables are turned, and I think...
Yes. Certainly in temperature.
But one thing is, obviously, there's two things. One, against the Chargers, they brought their own heaters.
Yeah.
The SoFi Stadium.
Yeah.
They brought heaters to a dome in a hot climate.
Yeah, it's 55 degrees, which I have to always minus 32 divide by 9 and multiply by 5, because that's how you get it into Celsius. It's about 15 degrees, so it's like a sort of autumn or spring day, and they had to bring heat to them. Yeah. Yeah, they're going to be getting 9 inches on Saturday night.
Yeah.
Of snow. So, this could really smack them in the jaw. And I for one, am here for it.
And the other one was a video that someone posted of the Dolphins head coach
actually around
with that T-shirt saying, can it be any more, can it be colder, or
I want I wish it were colder. Yeah, he's really working that sort of cringe dad angle, isn't he? The embarrassing dad who sort of tries to dance along with his teenage son's pop music. Yeah, he's trying a bit too hard, isn't he? Well, let's see how Tua can handle it. I have a feeling this could.
Waiting for him to actually turn up at the Ralph on the third line in shorts and t-shirt if he thinks he's hard.
Yeah.
But you know him, he's going to be in a full padded
jacket,
coat, gloves, the whole nine yards. Yeah. And you're thinking, mate, just your mind games ain't going to work.
Yeah, yeah. All we have to do is just keep flashing the Ryan Fitzpatrick shirtless cheering on from the stands when he wasn't even playing for the Bills. He was signed to another team and he came to support the Bills and he had his shirt off in zero in that. It was pretty much that weather as well, wasn't it? Yeah. It wasn't snowing, but it was close to zero centigrade, and that's Fitzpatrick, and that's the fundamental difference between those two teams.
But I think with this game, there are a couple of really key matches to actually watch out for. I mean, the injury report, obviously Ryan Bates is out.
Yes.
Jordan Phillips is out. Everyone else is limited. There's a few vet rests on Friday. And that's why the injury report was a little bit longer. But the key there is Bates on that O-line. We know how well this defensive line of Miami is. You just go back to week three and what that defense actually did against the Bills. Okay, we were missing Hyde, Poyer, White, Milano, Oliver, I can't. Too many. We were
missing. I actually wrote it down. We were missing against the Dolphins. We were missing Jordan Poyer, Trey White, Ed Oliver, and Mitch Morse. We also missed Dane Jackson and Naheem Hines, which perhaps not quite the same loss as the first four that I mentioned, and of course John Brown and Cole Beasley. But worth pointing out that while Gabe Davis and Dawson Knox did play, they were both lucky to still be making it. And this was at the point when Davis still had his ankle injury and he was working his way back into it. Those guys should be close to 100%. And I think Milano was playing, but he had to go off. And while he's limited this week, I don't think there's any chance Matt Milano doesn't play on Saturday night. Which just leaves us with Ryan Bates.
And I mean, it shows how good this is, because obviously our top rusher was Josh Allen in that game. Our second was Zach Moss.
Yeah, remember him?
And then Devin Singletary had 9 carries for 13 yards.
Yeah.
So it is a real big game in the trenches, and that's usually where it's won. And we mentioned on the last show that we had the most common five, and we're on there and obviously gained 7.4 yards per play. Obviously, taking out Bates now, you've got Saffold, who's struggled this season. Spencer Brown seems to start off well, but tails off each
very
season.
Very up and down, isn't he? Very uneven.
And obviously Dawkins not having the best of games against the Jets. It kind of makes you worry a little bit about this offensive line and what can happen against this defense of Miami, who got 4 sacks in the last game and actually really suffocated the it didn't really suffocate that much. The rush game. If you take out Josh's 47 yards, then yeah, they've suffocated a little bit. But when you've got that little weak link, chink in the armor, in this instance, it's going to be Van Roten, unless
But it's either Questenberry or Van Roten coming in, isn't it? And you do worry. And especially because it'll likely be on that right side next to Spencer Brown. So that whole right side, you'll wonder what they'll do. Do they do that? You'll know the phrasing better than me, where they almost put three over to that one side and try and push everything onto the left hand side instead via Dawkins and Saffold. They try and cover. The weakness that they've got at the right hand side. Don't run anything that side. Try and run it the other side.
I think that's going to be one of the keys to the game on there. I think I don't think there's going to be an issue too much with our offense. Obviously in that game, Josh threw for 400 yards. Okay, he had 42 completions on 63 attempts. For 400 yards, but this is where, and it's more than likely they're going to activate Beasley for this game.
Yeah,
against Miami, a hell of a lot of Josh's passes went down the middle. So in between, down the middle of the field. More and more after that game, and after the bye week, he started going away from the middle, as I mentioned on the review show, and went outwards. Now with Beasley, you're kind of going to see that. That move now towards hitting that middle of the field of the Miami defense. Because when Cole Beasley returning, this is what Matt Parrino actually put. Josh Allen has 6 games with 2 or more pass touchdowns in his first 7 games. Last 6 games, he's only had 2. So six of his first seven games, he had two or more passing touchdowns. Mm. His last six, he's only had two. Mm. The Bills' offense in the first six games were gaining an average of 323 yards per game. The last seven, 212. Big difference on there. And yes, he hasn't played for a while. I don't think he even played when he signed on to Buccaneers practice squad. But you can't, you've got that key now in Beasley, and hopefully they'll get Knox involved a little bit more. I mean, Isaiah McKenzie, if you take out Devin Singletary, was the highest receiver with 76 yards on seven carries and a touchdown. We know we can get it out there. It's just now scheming it.
Yeah,
we've got that safety net in the middle.
Mm. I'll make you a prediction now. Sure. I think this is, and certainly they will try, and I think that they will succeed in reviving the pass game. I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if they kind of revert to the sort of early season Bills of, you know, 60-40, 65-35 pass to run. Because I was just looking at the pass defense stats for the Dolphins, and the Dolphins aren't that great defending the pass. They're 30th on completions. Yeah. They're also sixth in attempts, which seems to me not only they give up the passes, teams know it and they go for it as well. By way of comparison, the Bills' pass defense is 13th, so about in the middle, 63.8%, but they're ninth on attempts. So people, yes, they complete against the Bills, probably on those third and longs, but they don't do it anywhere near as often because they know that they're more effective, whereas teams tend to throw against Miami. So, yeah, really good point you made there with, you know, going over the middle of the field, especially if you've got a weakened defensive line that's maybe not going to be that all that great at holding up making chances for the run. But maybe if they maybe hold up for long enough for Josh to find his targets. Dawson Knox had a really good game, had some valuable catches last week. I predict they go to him, maybe get one to Cole Beasley, try and keep it going to Diggs and Davis and just try and march down the field. Weather permitting is then always the thing you have to bear in mind, because snow's, what they're talking about is there's a lot of snow by Saturday night, because obviously at this point they have no idea whether it's going to be during the game or not. If there's snow on the field, that's not nearly as bad as if it's actually snowing during the game. So if the conditions are okay for passing, then I think the Bills can have a lot of success.
I mean, let me give you a couple of stats, and I want you to try and at least guess the years. This is Josh Allen through 13 games.
Yeah.
In the one year, it was 32 total touchdowns, 4,055 total yards, 11 interceptions through 13 games. The second year, 32 total touchdowns, 4,182 total yards, 11 interceptions.
So that sounds like roughly similar, very similar passing touchdowns to interceptions, and within about 100 yards or so of the total yards.
Yeah. I'll give you the second one. The second one is this year. It's 2022.
Yeah. I would say then that the other one, the other year, is last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's 2021.
Yeah, is the 2021 stats. He's not really changed all that much. He's not quite at the level that he was at 2020, because I think he really did break out. I think he probably took a lot of teams by surprise. And once you've got that amount of film, they're always going to make it more difficult for you. But yeah, he doesn't seem to have dropped off at all, to my mind. He's probably thrown a few more stupider interceptions, though not actually any greater in number. And he's certainly tidied that up over the past few games. So I just think he's ready to let go again.
And the points for the last of 13 games, last year, 353.
Yeah.
This year, 363. Last year, at this point, we were 7-6. Now we're 10-3.
You know what the difference there is, don't you? It's it's not just that, because what they always said was, oh yeah, the Bills either blow teams away, but if you keep it close, you can beat them. Well, those keeping it close games, we're winning now. That's the big difference. Have you seen? I'll throw a stat back at you. Have you seen? Do you know what the Bills' point differential is? As in, basically your goal difference.
It's 100 something.
It's over 100. Yeah,
it's about 147.
Not quite 124. We have a positive point differential of 124. We're 10-3. We have four, even including the Bengals, four winnable games in front of us from the number one seed. And you struggle sometimes to find too much optimism among the fan base at times, can you? With that kind of thing. What does this team have to do to get a bit of faith?
I think what they need to do is start off fast. Don't start off slow, because we know with this offense, we know it once it gets going, it gets going and no one can stay with us. But you've got a Miami team that I will give them credit, as much as I hate them, as much as I think that Tua's overrated, this whole defense is just based on one thing, speed. They are kind of explosive. And if they get out in front, you are going to be having a slog out. So you need to be playing, getting ahead first, playing your game, making Miami change what they need to do. And that's really, if we get 2-3 and outs to start and Miami put some points on, then that's going to be catch up. That's going to be football that we don't want to play. This will go to Josh being more hero ball than anything else, where we want a calm, collected, precision offense.
Yeah, the one thing that the doubters and the doubting Thomases have a valid point in, and actually Mark made it himself a few weeks ago, is that we've still not quite seen the Bills play a full four quarters of top quality football. We've just not seen it yet. We've seen it in bursts and in quarters and in halves, but we've not seen it in all four. Now, most people would probably regard that as a weakness. I almost perversely see that almost as a strength, that we can still find ways to win, not play our best. Now, you compare that to last year, when if we weren't playing very well, we'd lose. If we're not playing very well, it still takes weirdly hot weather, half your defense being injured, a series of just bizarre plays against the Vikings, and fair enough, not living with the heat that the Jets were bringing, with three defeats with a combined total of 8 points. I think, a lot more stronger place than we actually give ourselves credit to, and we should be rounding into the good form at this time of year. There's no point blowing away teams and playing champagne football in the first half of the season, because now is when it really counts. So getting the results when you need to, I wouldn't be surprised if we start seeing the performances from now on. And if I may say one more other thing, and maybe if you want to jump in, I think a lot of the commentary from Bills teams almost reflects the losing years that we've had to put up with.
Yeah.
With, we're a good team now, so we should play perfectly, because we're so scared of it going wrong this year, that if we play less than perfectly, there's a chance we won't win and it will be snatched away from us again. And I think it reflects an anxiety, and a very understandable one. I share it. You and I have been fans for as long as anyone has, of it's not good enough that we win a bit ugly or we win a bit dirty. We find a way to win. We have to thrash everyone's socks off, because we're afraid of showing vulnerability.
Yeah. I think that's the case. I mean, you look at it, and we can turn it into defense in a minute, but you've got an offense that on their day, and we saw it in the first 5-6 weeks, where Josh Allen had more pass yards in pretty much a game and a half less than the second place quarterback at the time. And that was going into our bye week. And the fact that the narrative changed a lot more and something happened during that bye week, injuries and all that, that brought us down. But good teams find ways to win. And the fact that they're doing it in close games, the fact that they're doing it the harder way and making it hard or trying to make it hard for themselves by starting to blow leads and all that, shows, as you say, that this offense and this team can win in multiple ways. And the fact that they haven't put it all together in one game bodes well for the playoffs, at least.
You look at the difference between the Bills having to win those last four games of the 2021 season just to even win the AFC East, because we almost would have missed the playoffs because New England would have won the division and that went right to the last game. You look at the jump up between that and the two games we played in the playoffs last year. That this team knows where the level is, but they just don't need to play it now. They just need to get over the line. It'd be interesting, that Bengals game. Obviously, we'll get to it. But I wonder if they turn it on for the Bengals game. They do enough to beat the Dolphins, do enough to beat the Bears, and then we start to really pour it on for the last couple of games.
Because this game pretty much seals, if we win, the AFC East, because we'll be three and a half games ahead of them.
Yeah.
If we win by more than two scores or something, that takes out another head-to-head
tiebreaker, isn't it? Yeah, it's all but mathematically certain. Before you even start talking about it, the Dolphins would have to win the last three and we'd have to lose the last three before that even becomes a factor.
Yeah,
it's as good as put to bed. We'd be 11-3, they'd be 8-6. It's as good as over. It's all over bar the shouting, really.
What we need to do is focus on this defense. And the one thing to come out last Sunday was what Leslie Frazier said about Elam. The fact that obviously Dane Jackson, Trey White had the whole game. He came out and actually said that he wanted to give him a bit of time. But what was the quote? It said his intention was to get Kyra Lamb in the game, but that Dane Jackson was doing such a good job. I don't know what game he was watching. and with how the game was going, they kept things as they are. And
yes,
we started questioning whether Elam maybe going backwards or Jackson has something on McDermott and Frazier. But one thing,
no, blackmail, you mean? Or
it's possible, you know?
Unlikely. I think they like him. I think they like him because I think they like late round guys who bust their tail, don't they? And I think Dave Jackson's one of those good guys who's a worker and a trier, but he's just not much of an achiever, at least not from what we've seen. I love all the sixth, seventh round guys. They're all right with me. I love those guys that come through. Oh, the 49ers guy, Mr. Irrelevant. I mean, isn't that amazing? You know, the first ever guy to take a snap. The first ever guy drafted last in the history of the NFL to ever take a snap as a starter. Incredible. And he beats Tom Brady. Yeah, fantastic. No, but yeah, Kyrie Lamb. I mean, I sort of proposed the theory, and if I'm right, then Elam sees a whole bunch of the field on Saturday. That because Elam is more of a man to man, I suspect they're going to play more man to man against the Dolphins. Then Elam gets on the field more, and they're sort of half redshirting him this year so he can learn the zone, because yes, Dane Jackson gives up the play on the third down, but he doesn't give up a touchdown. If you mess up the zone, you can give up a touchdown. If you mess up a man-to-man, you give up a pass interference.
Yeah, I think what's what we've seen, or what's actually been happening, is more recently the cornerbacks have actually really been getting more physical at the line of scrimmage, especially against the Dolphins. And obviously you've got Hill and Waddle, who are both really, who are quick guys. And Elam is there, and he was drafted mainly for, based on his man-to-man skills on that. And he can do that better than Jackson and Rhodes.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is, over the past 2 weeks, if you take away the big plays, the big touchdown passes that Miami had of 75, 45, and 60 yards, in the past 2 weeks, they've only had 347 yards of offense.
Yeah.
And the fact that, obviously, we'll have Poyer back, who's missing the first game. We'll have Trey White back. You get Elam, Milano playing a full game, Edmonds playing full game, Ed Oliver back. Obviously, we'll miss Von Miller, but you have faith in Greg Rousseau after what he's actually been able to do last week.
Trey Wilson.
You've got a defensive coordinator and a defense that take away that big pass threat. Because I think what the last game against Dolphins, I can't remember what the biggest game was for them. What was it? Was it? Where am I going? I'm going there. Their biggest play. Oh, it doesn't say. I need to be a bit more specific on that one.
But well, there was one point I was going to make. I don't know if it might jog your memory. Well, what's the thing they always say about Tua is that he's great as long as he does the timing and as long as the concept and the play route runs. You knock him off his balance, you force him to improvise. That's when the picks come, and that's when he gets off his feet. He's a timing based quarterback. He's not a scrambling. Type of quarterback. So yeah, to your point about being physical on the line, yeah, if they do the press coverage, yeah, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if Elam's on the field, because he definitely seems to be more in his wheelhouse.
Yeah. So the last game or week three game, I mean, Jalen Waddle had 102 yards on 9 rushes. Tyreek Hill had 2 receptions for 33 yards. And the longest play in passing game was to Jalen Waddle at 45 yards. The next longest, well, for Tyreek Hill was only 22 yards. So the fact that we can take away that big game, and now we've got Poyer back, and Hamlin, as long as they don't run at him,
yes,
especially the running backs, he can actually he can tackle. So we've got that back, that tandem, that almost a Hyde and Poyer 2.0. I don't really want to label it that, but you've got Hamlin who can set into ways and actually really limit that defense, limit that offense. And that's probably going to be one of the biggest things to watch, is how this defense can actually slow down again the Miami offense. Because they only gained 32 yards. No, hold on. 42 yards rushing. And that was a close game as well. So in that game, they net pass yards.
Yeah.
They had 382. They had 171.
Yeah. So I didn't look up the stats of the previous games. I just remember because it was one of the ones I actually made it to the Fitzrovia to see it as well. And I just remember just being so sick at the end of the game. I just walked out and sulked. I was in such a bad mood. But one of the things I do remember is that in spite of the fact that half of our defense was out, we pretty much shut them down. There was the one crazy play to Waddle over the top where they split the safeties. And it was one of those ones where they were saying, well, if Poyer or Hyde had been there, you know, you got to think that one's getting broken up. They had one really nice drive and they had a field goal playing at home. And you actually think you consider yourself pretty, you know, pretty happy with that return. We just needed a little bit more good fortune setting up field goals, and we would have won. And bear in mind, we've then now got another four or five. We've got Ed Oliver back, Trey White, you know, run through the list, Jordan Poyer.
You've got 380 passing yards, 171 passing yards to Miami, 115 rush yards, 41 to Miami. The yards per play were pretty much the same, 5.4 for Miami, 5.5 for the Bills. But what if the Bills can do it this week, especially if there is going to be quite a bit of snow and all that, they had pretty much double the time of possession. They had 31 first downs compared to 15 first downs for Miami and all that. If they can do the control of that clock, both sides, and slow them down and control it on offense, that is the moneymaker. That is the game there.
Yeah.
To be honest. And the one other thing I want to put on, and I've been reading Joe Biscaglia's All 22 when he after every game.
Yeah.
The fact that Daquan Jones, he's been the most underrated signing. We've talked about it quite a few times. The fact he's very much different from Harry Phillips and Star Lutalele, the fact that he's got a pass rush in him. And when you've got him and Oliver playing together, you've got a really strong interior that will get pressure and stop the run at the same time. And for against the Jets, obviously Jones played 20 of the last 21 defensive snaps in that fourth quarter against the Jets.
He's
probably the most underrated signing, and I think he has been a godsend almost. We've actually finally solved that one tech position.
Yeah. Well, I think we're having to sort of grudgingly admit that the rest of the league, I think, is finding out about Matt Milano. So now we need another player that's criminally under the radar. And I think Daquan Jones fits it perfectly well. I mean, I remember for years we had all sorts of problems with run defense, didn't we? People would run on us all day. And they really don't anymore. And he's been an absolutely essential part of that.
Yeah. So, I mean, before we wrap up, get any final thoughts, and are you going to put? We're going to lay down a prediction.
I'm going to lay down the predictions. It's funny. I know I don't want to sound too much of a traitor, but I'm really rooting for the Lions this week over the Jets. So I was just looking at the possibilities. I think if the Lions win like three of the last four games, they've won five of the last six, and the only one they lost was to us on Thanksgiving, following a Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs bit of magic and a walk-off field goal. So that really impressed me over the past few weeks. And I love bad teams when they get good, when something's about them and they just figure all things out. I always root for the underdog in almost everything. So I'd be absolutely chuffed to bits if the Lions made the playoffs. so I think if they win three of the last four, I think they should go above Seattle and New York and get the last wild card place. I think the whole nation's behind Detroit. Yes, I'm going to make a prediction for the game, and I'm going to be very bold.
Okay.
And it's weather permitting, because if it's 9 inches of snow, if it snows during the game, if it's a blizzard during the game, then, you know, forget it. But as long as the conditions are roughly playable, I think the Bills' passing game comes to life. I think Dawson Knox gets a touchdown. I think Davis could be really dangerous. I think he finally gets a good game. I think that they'll win it through the air. I think Josh will be fine. And I just think that the defense, with the revenge, they're playing at home. They want him back. I don't think the Dolphins ever really like playing here. I don't think Tua will. I think they can put him off. I think this could be 31-10.
Yeah. I'm going to make a prediction as well. And I'm just scrolling through Twitter. Obviously we mentioned earlier about the McDaniels t-shirt. Saying, I wish you could put.
Hilarious.
If you look at that picture closely,
Yeah.
You see underneath, the shirt he's wearing underneath is long sleeve.
Oh, yeah. He's he's got two layers, hasn't he?
He's got it rolled up. So that's, that kind of makes me laugh pretty much. The fact that he's wearing long sleeves indoors in Miami.
Yeah.
Saying, I wish it were colder. Why are you wearing two? But no, I think it might actually be another close game. I think the weather will play a part in it, regardless of whether it's set or not. But it's going to be a Bills win. I think we're going to set ourselves up even more for the number one seed and clinch the AFC East. I'm going to say 24-17. I can see some garbage time plays from Miami when they have to play catch up to actually to make it that one score game. And I predict that should Beasley be elevated, he gets at least one touchdown in this game. He makes a bit of an impact in that one game.
That is bold. I like it. Right. Well, we'll mention that for the post game show then. Beasley touchdown. Okay.
But yeah, no, I think it's going to be an interesting game. It's a game that, as I mentioned in the review show, it's not really put us under pressure that much to win, because I say we're two games ahead of Miami at the moment. They're 8-5 at the moment. 8-5. We're 10-3. Yeah. And the fact that they've got more on them to win.
Yeah.
Then we have. So we let them try and force it, play the hero ball that Josh does, plays into our hand. We've got nothing really to lose as much in there, because we've got another winnable game against the Bears. A winnable game against the Bengals and the Patriots to end up. So we lose that one. Okay, we'll lose a tiebreaker if Miami happen to win out and actually go level with us. But I think it's a game where we don't have to go in with the pressure.
I don't think anyone in the team will think that. I think they will feel embarrassed that they lost to Miami and they will want to beat them. I mean, of course, you always want to win your divisional games and what have you. But I think, similar to the Jets, I think we get our Back to the Future 3. And I think we finish that AFC East trilogy in a lot of style. I don't know if you ever knew this. Have a look after the show. Anyone's listening, if you don't know this, the guy who played Biff Tannen, and stop me if you've heard this, Matt, if you're a Back to the Future fan, Tom.
A little bit of a Back to the Future fan. I do watch it.
Okay. But completely irrelevant. But have a look. Put Tom Wilson, the question song, into YouTube, because he basically stopped acting not long after he did Back to the Future. He wasn't really an actor, although I think he's absolutely terrific as Biff. But he carries around with him an A4 sheet of paper, like a whole stack of like A4 like cards, because obviously people just stop him and ask him like the same questions about like Back to the Future. So he just hands it to them and like walks away. And it's like the FAQ of like every question he's asked. And he does like a lot of music and stand-up comedy now as well. And that's like just what he does, kind of thing. And so he's got a brilliant song that he sings about the questions that he's always asked. And it's really fun, because the first thing he says is, he just says, I'm Tom Wilson, I play Biff Tannen in all three Back to the Future movies. And then it's, Michael J. Fox is nice. And that's the first thing, which I think is such an endearing bit of the human spirit, that he's not asked about money or who's a jerk, or the question he must be asked more than anything else is Michael J. Fox nice? And he was like, yes, he is. He is nice. And it's like Christopher Lloyd is also nice, but he's quite shy. If you have a look, you can Google it. It's on Google Images. Tom Wilson questions. Have fun.
I think it's with the other trilogies, Godfather, Naked Gun, all that. It comes to a thrilling end, and for the Bills, it's going to be a thrilling 3-0 AFC sweep in this trilogy. And unfortunately, the Fitzraven Bell won't be showing the game this week because it's flexed to Sunday morning. But obviously, continue to follow Robin, myself, Mark on socials. Follow the the fan group and the podcast on the social as well. And all we can really say is for Robin, this is Matt saying good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Thank you for listening, and let's go Buffalo Bills.
Go Bills.
You don't know anything about heart. You don't know anything about work. Huh? That's who we are.